freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps. We are a listener-supported radio station, and if you'd like to donate, please visit us at www.freedomslips.com and click on our listener support pages. Join us in chat. Click around our site. It's pretty awesome. This week was profound. On the Bo and Rocco show, Rocco called in and gave us an update. And last night, I was on Corporation Nation with Clint Richardson, and that was such a beautiful experience for me. And hopefully he'll be able to join us tonight. Not sure. I kind of sprung it on him last night, so I understand if he's not able to show up. Okay, so here he is, too. Let me bring him in here. Let's see. Add people, I believe, is the way to do this. I hope. Please bear with me, folks. Sorry. Do I have you? Oh, maybe not.
Good dog.
Awesome. You're there. How are you?
Good.
It's great to have you on. Last night was so profound for me. I mean, that was amazing. Thank you for the time. I mean, there's something else.
Good times, huh? Well, you did most of the talking.
Yeah, always. I'm a female.
Well, actually, I don't meet my match very often as far as gab, but you did it, man.
It was awesome. It was so cool to just sit down and, you know, and be able to get through that much information and, you know, without any fences or concepts. You know, it's nice to, you know, just be able to get that much out there and have you realize everything as well as, it's absolutely profound. The awakening is just, I'm seeing it more and more and more every day. And I mean, these days, what are you seeing over there? I mean, you're in a different, kind of a different venue over there on RBN. And are you able to bump into others such as yourself?
Are we on air?
Yeah. Yeah, we are. Oh, that was kind of I see. Now, that's not very politically correct.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I mean, the reason I ask is because I, as far as RBN goes, there's all this really strange politics going on just on a constant basis. And the listeners know the politics. All I do is log on at 6 p.m. Mountain and say my piece until 8 p.m., have good guests like yourself. And the rest of the politics at RBN, whatever's happening.
Oh, it looks like you're cutting out. Oh, that's not going to be a good thing. Let me know when you're back. I didn't, you know, I am impulsive, so I didn't realize the loaded question there.
Well, no, it's okay. I don't have a contract there. I don't get paid. I have no sponsors. I am free to say what I want. And basically, the deal is that if I get censored, my audience, that's exactly the working relationship I have with the boss. And after 90 shows, I think we're number 90, actually.
And now you're cutting out again. It must be your connection. I wonder if you've got a hard line or if you're on Wi-Fi or something. I know. Oh, maybe I've lost the station. It looks like I might have. Then I'll be right back, folks. Hopefully, I think I've got it again. Hopefully, and it looks like Clint's off. And again, everybody, tonight, Clint Richardson from Corporation Nation over on RBN is on with us. If we can get him back here. And I used to listen to RBN all the time. I used to listen to, of course, our very own Wild Bill, Bill Samsel of the Samsel Report. You can hear him every Saturday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 p.m. Central, right here on freedomslips.com, Studio B. And I know I love listening to it. I love listening to Bill. I love having him here. And you know, like I proposed last night to Clint, I would love to hear him on Revolution Radio, because basically the only reason I ever tune in anymore is to hear Corporation Nation, which is, it's just a profound show. Do we have you back, Clint?
We do.
Good.
Hopefully that fixed it. If not, I'll call in on my landline. Looks like we're having the same problems, huh?
Yeah. Really nice censorship. I have to remind the listeners here and any agents that I am a sovereign state, any form of censorship of any kind falls under 18 U.S.C. subsection 794, which is espionage. It's contrary to state security, to the betterment of national security, which is not adhering to my state law, and you will be held accountable for your works.
Yeah, and you can go to my blog and read my notice to the TSA, or to the NSA, excuse me, as well, which actually refers to color of law and the 10-year imprisonment that you'll be faced with if you're caught screwing or spying on or recording this conversation.
Absolutely. So that's just awesome. Again, you know, all of these different departments and everything, and the NSA, for example, it's just so profound to me to see the FBI with a different hat than the CIA. And, you know, it's all created out of the 1947 National Security Act. It's all in there. The CIA was created under the National Security Council. Now, the CIA is a production company. It produces intelligence to fill you up with artificial intelligence so that you can be the new robot. And that's what it's all about. Automated society. Culling the overhead, keeping the population low enough to control, and maintaining policy, which is corporate policy and insurance policy. And that's why we're here. Corporation Nation over on RBN, and here, Leaving the Farm, Bo and Rocco Show, and so many others that are now realizing that it's just, this is the apex, isn't it?
Well, it's like a cult. I mean, that's the best way to describe it. I've got this magazine that I saw and had this big, it had this big five-pointed star on the front, you know, and it's talking about cults. And so I was reading the magazine. I had to get it because there's this lady who's supposedly a professional and was in a cult. And she explains what it is to actually try to leave a cult and how hard it is. And, of course, I'm in the Utah area, so we have our own special cult going on here, which is more bizarre than most, with the ceremonies they do, and it's really unfortunate. What really is telling is when you actually go to the groups that are, there's lots of groups that are there to help people from actually coming out of Mormonism back into normal society, normal life, where, you know, I guess one of the killers for me when someone tried to get me to, I guess, convert to Mormonism, it's very simple. If your family or your daughter or your son or your grandmother does not want to be Mormon, then you're pretty much not allowed to talk to them. You're pretty much forced to disown them or excommunicate them from your life if they are not Mormon. And that right there was enough for me to say, well, wait a minute, there's nothing Christian about that at all. So,
absolutely. And you see that in Amish culture, Christian culture, Catholic culture. These are all conceptual designs. And Mormonism is one of the ones that are more out there. This stuff on the television programming, notating sister wives and all of these different programming modules. These are programming modules. This programs you, the human, computer to maintain that these things actually exist. Those are all false flags, and the FBI came out in 2010, 2012 again, along with the CIA, and said, hey, look, we're the ringers. We infiltrate, we create these things, we maintain these productions to provide you with false flags. You think your neighbor is killing you. You think your neighbor is doing this or this. But the heads of these institutions, the majority now that are up and coming, that are so loud that you're seeing on the media, these things are created and promoted by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, by the Central Intelligence Agency, creating these intelligence productions. You know, Amish is like the worst one. You look at it and it's so blatant. They all dress in uniform. They're all right there, and they're all at those farmer markets, and they're all right there. That is commerce. They're facilitating commerce and navigation. And what you see is this Puritan society. And behind the scenes, why are you seeing all of them at the bar? Why are you seeing all of them in schools? Why are you seeing them all of these places? Those are false flag tactics, and that creates concepts and cultures in the mind just as much as the hood does. These things are all presentations by which to pit and polarize human beings.
Well, when I was looking, I was doing this, at least a year's worth of genealogical research and pulling all the presidents, you know, or cousins, and not just cousins, but blood type. They carry the same, you know, negative blood, and they, and then I realized that the Constitution was set up for the family, not for the people, but for their people, for their progeny. It even says that within the Constitution. It refers to people, but of course it's referring to the progeny, which, you know, at the time wasn't the common man. And so I was walking through the genealogy center which is downtown Salt Lake. And I got to tell you, man, one of the biggest kick in the pants I've ever got is to see the chart of Mitt Romney. It was actually the chart of Ann Hutchinson. Ann Hutchinson was a witch in Salem, Massachusetts, that according to church record was banished because she was a midwife and she was burying babies, I guess. I don't know how to explain it, but she was burying babies in the woods. That were some kind of something going on there, I don't know. And when you look at the family tree, you see that from that family, which was, again, the Massachusetts, you know, the Salem, Massachusetts, the colonies, I got a different perspective on what the Puritans actually were. Puritans, mostly they came from the Dutch colonies. There's a lot of Dutch buildings actually around Utah. And boy, they are actually what King James was actually referring to when he wrote his book Demonology. And they came over here on behest of the Queen, actually financed them to come over here. When you look at this chart, you see George Bush, you see Mitt Romney, you see Winston Churchill, you see Childers, that was he was the president of Ireland, I believe. You see Leslie Lynch King is actually Gerald Ford. You see just this amazing collection of bloodline cousins who've been president. And it's, you know, Nixon, Ford. It's really, really, really eye-opening to see that. And, of course, they've taken it down and they've altered the chart now so that they don't show Ann Hutchinson because we figured it out. So it's just the Puritans, the problem with the Puritans – It's very much a sort of a Zionist point of view, where their belief, their congregational governments that they had, which is congregational through the church, congregational churches, was to basically use this life in order to get to the next. So they basically their credo was similar to Talmudic credos, where it says you can abuse and harm anyone you can as long as it suits your purpose and it's for the good of the congregation that's going to go to heaven, basically. And
absolutely.
So I thought, well, why would you want someone to be the caretaker of this earth who's only interested in this sort of obscure notion of an afterlife? and damaging this earth and damaging nature and damaging everything against the teachings of the Bible. And right. that was a big wake-up call.
Which is not an afterlife. These learned elders of Zion, that is those faces. That is Bush. That is the educated, the actual educated with gnosis of the game. That is, those are those faces. The Talmudic Jew, those are those faces. They're following the Talmud. They're not Jewish in by blood. They're following the Talmud. They're following the protocols for the elders of Zion. You can go all the way back, and these are different masks on different faces. Rome went into Westphalia, which is Germany. Germany went into United States of America. These are concepts. They're not actual geographical locations. They're concepts of republics or concepts of democratic theory or concepts of constitutional theory. Israel has a constitution. India has a constitution. Where did these things come from? They all stem from the same location, the American Constitution, the Articles of Confederation. All of these things stem through the Magna Carta. It just goes on, and it only changes according to market conditions of the time. But all of these presentations, they're all the same thing. Before the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, it was the CIG, which is the Central Intelligence Group. They used to be in groups of philosophers, the Vienna Circle. These things, councils, committees, all of these things are groups of individuals just as much as Skull and Bones or just as much as the Masons. The concept or the overall overrule of politics or government or religion starts at the top with media. How much can you stack? Media is a weight or value. Then underneath media is insurance. And then underneath insurance is the product. Now, in this society, the product is, the majority of the product is court. But in other societies, the product might be something else. Mattel, you know, when you go into national society, when you go into corporate society, you have Microsoft, you have Google. All of these things are creation. And as you stack these things, and the human mind starts to weigh them as logical in creation because we've been taught to stack. What is your denomination? It's one of the first questions I used to be asked all the time. What church do you go to? No, that doesn't mean what church I go to. That says, what is your denomination? D-E meaning of, nomen meaning law. What law are you under? How much are you worth? What value are you? It's so disgusting. This is capitalism. Capit means the human head.
Yeah, well, and what was it? There's some tax listed in the Constitution that they say you're not supposed to have. Is it a capita tax or a? It means head.
Right, without enumeration of power, and that means without. If you don't give me power, I can't put a tax on your head. That's all that says. And that one was the most profound because that is actually Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4. Now, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 3 says no bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. That means there's nothing else after that point in time. That was the original contract that they had with the Treasury to get monies out of the Treasury to protect humankind, which, of course, they didn't do. But then in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 4, it continued, and that happens to be in brackets. Anything in brackets maintains that it's optional. You can accept this or you can't. You know, you can deny it. However, following that is all commentary. First Amendment, Second Amendment, Third Amendment, all of that is commentary. And if you accept that as your constitution, what fills you up, then that's the way that you're going to be tricked out according to market conditions. You can now purchase your right for free speech through an attorney, through the American Civil Liberties Union. You can purchase your right to be black or white through the ACLU, through the NAACP, through all of these different programs. You can purchase your right to be. They're the law merchant. They're going to sell you anything as long as you're going to buy the concept.
Yeah. Well, and I think the most important part, obviously, to any situation, this has been going on since, you know, again, those days of Rome and before. It's a biblical thing that a lot of people don't realize. of course, is the currency. The currency is the most absolutely most important thing. It doesn't matter what the currency is, as long as it can be controlled. And, you know, the concept, first of all, to allay any fears that people have, it is absolutely patently ridiculous for anyone. If you hear anyone on the news or in the radio saying that that we've reached the debt ceiling and that we're going to go bankrupt and da-da-da-da-da, all of that is complete crap. There is no possible way that the United States can ever be bankrupt. It can never run out of money because it prints its own money. It can print – why can't we have $100 trillion or a quadrillion dollar debt? It doesn't actually exist. All they have to do is print more money or just rub it off. Instead of raising the debt ceiling, they could just lower the debt and everything would be the same because the debt is owed to the United States. There's very, very little debt that's in China, you know, all of that. And we have about $10 trillion worth of infrastructure built up in China. We could pull out of there and break their economy in a second.
Government since 1941 with the Atlantic Charter. It's all Congress creating these concepts. And the thing was, is that, yes, they can print their own money, but the origins stem from garnering money through bills from the actual Treasury, which is the House of Lords. Now, the House of Lords maintains that Treasury. When the United States Incorporated comes in and it offers a bill that you think is going to become an act, that means it's going to be put into action. So these bills are presented to the House of Lords, and it says, all of our citizens are insane. They're all diagnosed with depression and bipolarism and all of these different diagnoses. They're all criminals. They're running around rampant. They're crazy. This was getting money out of the Treasury until October of 2013. When we brought in evidence to maintain to the House of Lords and the Treasury that they have been embezzling since the 1600s, more specifically since 1777 when Congress came in and pledged and charged the human being to discharge its bankrupt states, then that's when they were cut off from the Treasury. And we did the same thing last year in March. We cut them off from the Federal Reserve through the IMF because through Federal Reservation, they're saying they're protecting females under feminism. I evidence myself by throwing myself under the bus that they have no intent to protect me. Their only intent was to harm me, and I kept, you know, I brought this right in front of them. I put it on evidence, and we were able to cut off their Federal Reserve monies through the IMF. They voluntarily withdrew last year, March 8th, and it has been so profound because most people don't realize, oh, they're issuing bills, they're going to pass this law. No, right now is the time in all of our lives, in all of Congress's lives, that you will find they're issuing more bills now than they ever have in the past because they're trying to get money out of that Treasury. They're trying to figure out a way to get money out of the Treasury. They can only do that if they can evidence that they're protecting mankind.
Yeah.
They're not doing that. They have been preying on us from birth, cradle to grave, and it's enough.
It's important to realize too that money just doesn't disappear. When people say, the 9/11 happened and all these insider, there was millions of dollars in inside trades that was going back and forth. The truth is, as far as the entire, you know, economy worldwide, there were trillions taken out of the so-called markets that went into these people's, you know, pockets or went into the government's investment funds. The concept that there were a few inside traders, you see, every time a stock goes, if you lose money on a stock, people don't think about this. That money just doesn't disappear. It goes into someone else's hand. So they want you. They want you, like, they're drooling to make people join a pension, get an investment, start an IRA, because they are going to make money. First of all, your broker is going to make money whether you win or lose. Second of all, and you will lose.
You cut out. Just 1 second. You should be back. Let me know when you're back. Oh, are you back? Darn it all. So when we're playing the stock market, the stock market, of course, being the human being, that is the market. You are labeled in Black's Law Dictionary as a commercial unit, and you can be separated. A community is a commercial unit, a family is a commercial unit, a body politic is a commercial unit, culture is a commercial unit. You, an individual, if you're claiming to be an individual, is a commercial unit. And everything is just changing as per market conditions. And the stock market refers to the human being. I'm glad you're back. Market, they never lose anything because of the insurance aspect. They're insuring, they're hedging the bet. So say, for example, if you go into an institutionalized state and you're put in jail, okay, the first thing that occurs is somebody's going to bet against you. And that is called a certificate of deposit. You are the thing that's deposited into a holding corporation, the lower chambers of the exchequer, which, of course, is not a jail. It's Northern Holdings and Trust or whatever holding corporation that you're deposited into. That certificate of deposit is betting against your productivity. So if you get somebody to put down a $5,000 bond, which is a certificate of deposit against you, that $5,000 will prompt them to say, well, you're a bad guy for this amount of time. So you're producing in that. Now, if somebody laid down a bet against you, say, $100,000 certificate of deposit with a return of, say, 15% to 20% in the next 3 months, guess what you're going to be doing? You're going to be called a rapist or a pedophile. You're going to be injured in jail. You're going to be beat down by the cops. You're going to be, prompted into another state in order to hedge that bet. That's the next step in this system. So here you are in jail. You're backed by a certificate of deposit. This is the development aspect of an industrializing corporation. The next thing they're going to do is cover the spread. So if you're projected to produce $100,000 and you're kind of, you want to make things more exciting, you're going to come in with a municipal hedge fund and hedge that bet.
You know, and just to verify that this is just giving another example of that. When I was young, I was 21, 22. I was dealing blackjack up in Lake Tahoe.
Mm-hmm.
I had he was the former commissioner of baseball, and a couple of players, I think, that were retired, that were sitting at my table. And right behind us, we were sort of the back of the casino, and right behind us was the sports book. And I was looking at that sports book, and I was just kind of mumbling to myself, I just don't understand how that works, you know, all the betting structures and everything. And they were so drunk, and they probably didn't think it would ever, get out. But, I mean, they said very clearly, they said, it's fixed.
Absolutely.
The whole sports industry, every single sport that's bet on, when you're watching football like an idiot, you're watching football and you see 5 touchdowns scored in the last minute, that's because they're covering the point spread.
Right.
So the same thing's going to happen if the commodities market is betting on your estate and your future work productivity. I mean, it's very, very simple to understand.
And I'm thankful you brought that up, because I have been trying to explain for, years what North Korea is. North Korea is a concept. It's called the Pyongyang Project. It's a capacity building venture. And that's exactly what it is. It's that card game covering the spread. And what we're dealing with, what we're finding in the school settings, the indoctrination system itself, is teaching us to live as, quote, Korean citizens. Now, earlier, we were in a class, and we were talking about romance. And what you don't realize is that when you're buying flowers or when you're buying things for females, you are giving her an object, something that dresses her up. That is the action of a Roman citizen. That's romantic. But that's the action of a Roman citizen. You are actually acting as a Roman citizen. As you are viewing each other as objects and dressing each other up with other objects, buying each other things, being attracted to each other because of the number of things you have or the toys rather than your scent frequency. I mean, this is what makes you the citizen of these corporations or these structures.
And, it's really funny about that. I tease people all the time. I was like, That diamond on your finger, your husband paid what, $5,000 for it? I could have found you a one that's double that size, just by going to the beach in Africa. I mean, one of the things that the family was so famous for, what's his name, Cecil Rhodes, is for publicly stating that we cannot allow the diamond business to get out to allow anybody else in the business. We must keep the perception of artificial scarcity so that we can keep the prices high. But honestly, diamonds are, for all intents and purposes, diamonds are mostly just worthless. And they've been sold to us as this concept, as you say, of a shiny thing that has some meaning that it doesn't. And it's so pathetic when I see the industry. I walk into a mall every once in a while just to see how the other half lives, and there's five jewelry stores in there all competing against each other, and they're selling these crystals that are virtually worthless to fools who don't know history.
Right.
That's really what it boils down to. You know, the other thing. The other concept I think that's most important is money itself. The concept of what money is has everybody fooled. They've called gold for centuries and centuries, eons really. They've called gold the nation killer. Gold is literally nicknamed the nation killer. There's a really good reason for that. So we always talk, because we've been fooled by the Ron Pauls and the Alex Jones and all these people selling gold. We've been fooled to look at gold as something that we should hoard, when in fact it's actually a cure for insomnia. It's actually something you should be putting in your body. It's a commodity that should be used for things. But we've been trained to put it in a can and bury it. Treating it, you know, without respect and for what it really is. I mean, I have an associate that actually believes that he's found the way to make manna out of the Bible. Gold, that's the real value of gold. It's a weightless material. It's white powder that he calls manna. He can't do it himself. He has to actually go to government to do it because it's such a sophisticated process. It's literally alchemy.
Absolutely, so, and that's the same thing that psychology does and psychiatry does. It's a form of alchemy, and you can find this in the Exchequer, the rules of the Exchequer. But when I have to explain commodity real quick before we get ahead of ourselves, when you're looking at a creation, you're looking at a commodity. Culture is a commodity. Religion is a commodity. You know, any aspect that a human being can exist in, rather than its original state, is a commodity. These things are closely secreted. These things are closely geared towards something. It's geared towards a future market. That's what future trading is based on, is the futures of human beings and how they're going to react and behave with variants on pressure, which, you know, the last show we were speaking about fourth-generation warfare. Yeah. When you go to the dialogue of the Exchequer, the rules of the Exchequer, book one, part, let's see, 14, explains the thesaurus, and it maintains, quote, that thesaurus sometimes means the money itself, sometimes the place where it is kept. Know, moreover, that thesaurus sometimes mean the money and cash itself, as well as gold or silver vessels of different kinds and changes of vestments. Hats. You're putting on all of these hats. I'm a doctor today. I'm a teacher today. I'm a wife. I'm a husband. I'm a fictional whatever. This is what the gold is. This is what backs the actual physical aspect of gold and petrol dollars and the FRN. It's you. Using all of these variants on language and psychological construct by which you're pit apart. And I'll continue reading. According to the acceptation, it is said, quote, where thy treasure is, there will thy heart be also. For thesaurus is called the place in which it reposes. Therefore, thesaurus equals arithesis. You are the gold. Every time that you are entered into controversy or conflict or discourse, and being altered of your original heading. Your original heading is simply human being. And when you're altered of that, that's when they're making money on your behavioral outcome, the predetermined outcome, because you're already indoctrinated with all the rules of whatever product they're creating. If they want a Muslim, they're going to hand you the Quran. If they want a Christian, they're going to hand you the Bible. If they want a Jew, they're going to hand you the Torah. If they want a Talmudic Jew, they're going to hand you the Talmud. You know, and all of these things, these educational indoctrinations, they're put in place to make sure that this thesaurus is always, always, always working. That those concepts are always being sold to you. And in the end, eventually, the law merchant, or the one selling you those concepts, is always with fat pockets, full bellies, and a nice warm place to sleep.
Isn't this, this is what the, in the Bible say, I'm going to paraphrase, obviously, but the Bible is very specific. It said, you should be seeking knowledge as opposed to gold and rubies, basically, is what it says.
Absolutely.
Because that's where the real gold is. You know, what's also funny about this is there's another meme going on, or a concept that we should have a gold-backed currency. And this is one of the things there, in my opinion, you know, 90% of the gold is held by just a few families. It's not held by the people. Maybe 10% might be held by the people. The rest is already held by government and you know, these wealthy families. So if you have a gold-backed securities, the only thing that's going to happen is they're going to raise the price of gold. That gold isn't going to back the dollar, and then they're going to plummet the price of gold and rebuy the gold.
Absolutely.
It's really simple. The thing, people, look up the word. It's a French word, I believe. It's called seigniorage. Very important concept in money. Right now, the seigniorage on every dollar that's printed is 53 cents, I think, according to the Mint, and that includes the interest from the Federal Reserve. It includes a bunch of other things. But what seigniorage used to be, when we had gold and silver, let's say we had a 90% silver coin, well, they would mix the silver with another metal. Now, people think, oh, well, they do that because it makes the metals, the coin stronger. No. That's called seigniorage. You see, that 10% is a much, much, much less expensive metal. So it's actually a tax, a hidden tax that nobody really kind of realized, called seigniorage. And so they sell the 90% silver as 100% silver coin, and yet 10% of it isn't silver. So it's a tax, literally.
Absolutely. And again, you look at the when you look at market conditions and the market value of silver and gold versus the actual value, you go back to the Constitution, to the 1947 National Security Act, to any act, and you see these numbers with these accidental typos beside them, because they're numbers without dollar signs. Those dollar signs only indicate an FRN, a Federal Reserve note. When there's no dollar sign, that refers to lawful money. So if they say a politician is getting paid $6,000 a month, that says he's getting paid 6,000 ounces of gold per month.
Yeah, and let's not forget who sets the price of gold. Unfortunately, it's done at the Rothschild Bank in London, where the Securities and Exchange Commission and several other U.S. agencies have offices. They all get together, all these bankers, and they set the price of gold. So naturally, if they are setting the price of gold, it's called the London fixing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, probably shouldn't have a gold-backed currency when they are in control of the right.
Right, and you should look at those words, the London fixing. They're fixers. They're ringers. And that goes back to the seigniorage. Now, when you go into signatures and assignment, you're looking at who's signing, and that is your signer, which is Monsignor, and that's all he is. He walks around and he signs things on your behalf saying, well, it patronizes me, so I might as well do that, and that's what the districts are. It broke the entire, quote, United States of America up into districts. That was maintained through the 1802 Indemnification Convention, which indemnified human beings, creating those commissions. The Securities and Exchange Commission is, of course, commissioned by Congress, These things are all written in stone. 1802 began the nationalized states, and all of that stemmed from the 1789 Judiciary Act, which first created the illusion of districts. It said that it maintained that all courts that you go into are actually facilitating business or internal revenue servicing into the original 13 colonies. So if you're in court, say in Utah somewhere, if you arrive in court the second Tuesday of April, you might be in court in Philadelphia, or you're in court in Massachusetts or Delaware, and that's where you're producing for your corporate governance, which is, of course, Congress and the United Nations. Each nation is a county. That is a foreign nation. So the United Nations are just the United States incorporated in a nationalized state, referring to also Google. Google is a foreign state. Microsoft is a foreign state. These are all your corporate governance since the 1933 bankruptcy of the United States incorporated, or the illusion of a bankruptcy, just like everything else.
It's also really important to, for folks to understand. I mean, this is what I spent the last 4 years learning, 5 years, that, you know, all these companies, Microsoft and all the foreign companies in China, all the banks across the world, every corporation basically in the world that, that has any value to it whatsoever, has any place in the marketplace, as we call it, you got to understand these, the stock in those corporations are owned by various governments across the world, the United States being the majority holder of stock in most corporations around there. When we look at Microsoft, everybody thinks, oh, well, that's Bill Gates' company. No, actually it's not. He has really nothing to do with the company except being CEO. The second that he gets out of line, the board of directors will do what the shareholders wish them to do, and they will vote Bill Gates out. Of course, he's one of them, so that's not going to happen. But, you know, your Warren Buffett's and your all these people, they are just CEOs. They do not own their companies. Bill Gates might have 2% of the shares, but government has a lot more than that. Right. And most of that's in the pension system. That's the importance of the pension system. So you basically what you have is you have the whole corporate structure of not only America but most of the world in the hands of the U.S. government as the main shareholder, and they pool their what they call proxy shareholder votes together.
Whoops, and of course you just cut out. Repeat that if you can, please.
They pool their what they call proxy votes or proxy shareholder votes, which is like an absentee vote, into a private corporation, an association that basically gets them all together and votes to, say, mergers and acquisitions. They right. vote for the salaries. They vote for the CEO, who's the CEO
Absolutely.
Is going to be. So it's a closed-loop system. If you invest in a company, you have no say in that company. But government – Our United States has over, of America, I should say, has over 230,000 different governments, all of them contributing through taxpayer money, contributing to the investment scheme of government. Absolutely. And it's all centralized. And so you live in a massive corporocracy, basically, that's being controlled at the fundamental level by basically a private association that pools all these government investments together. All of their votes go together. And so you have no randomness. I mean, everything that Monsanto is doing is controlled by government. Everything that Microsoft is doing is controlled by government. It's a, if you will, it's a sacrosanct. It's a melding of everything. Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible when you realize it.
It's a confederacy. It's a criminal enterprise as defined by Black's Law Dictionary. And it is Congress, 1941, August 14th, with the Atlantic Charter. The third, quote, they respect the right of all peoples to choose the form of government under which they live. Now, that gave Congress global governance. That is the New World Order that was signed into on August 14th, 1941. The very next phase of that was Malthusian theory. 1942, Churchill and Roosevelt came back in and they said, well, okay, we're going to go with the Master Lend-Lease Agreement. And what that is, it stems from Malthusian theory, of course. Thomas Malthus, he wrote The Nature of Rent. And it's absolutely horrifying. And then they upped the ante when they came in. They noticed that there was some beautiful commodities to by which to extrapolate. And around 1941, 1942, and they started creating all of this selfish behavior, individualism and communism all at the same time. So they had all of these things clashing about and just generating loads and loads and loads of revenue. By 1974, with the Inspector General's Act, which actually insured all of these deposits with the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, they came in with this new game of insurance. The medical industry has never seen the likes of what is going on now. You can have a citizen sitting on its couch now, watching television, diagnosing itself, by which to engage with this system, by which to produce for this system. That has never occurred in past history that we know of, because the media influence from the written literature, the media influence from even radio broadcasting, was nothing in comparison to television programming and allowing the mind to be programmed 8 hours a day, 6 hours a day. I mean, that's what people do. They go out, they pull their 40-hour week, and the rest of the time they're watching television, or they're watching sports, or they're watching television elsewhere and thinking that it's not television. When you go to the bar and you're drinking and you're watching television, that's still watching television programming. And you're never away from that control. And so all in all, you're always going to be that commodity until you realize exactly what all of these concepts are. What is a female? What is a male? Those are stocks. That's why you're called those things. Those are stocks. And the stock market is controlled exclusively by Congress, by the United States Incorporated, as its own trustee over its bankruptcy holding Microsoft and Google, you all, and holding corporations.
It's actually worse than that. The stock market, what we call the stock market, is a series of private corporations, or public, really, corporations, public stock, I mean, that, you know, the BSE, which is the Brazilian stock market, you've got the Chinese, you've got the Japanese, and you've got the American, the NASDAQ. These are all – NASDAQ is a corporation. And what you might not know is that it's a corporation with stock, each one of them. And when you look, again, at the pension fund holdings, especially like CalPERS, you'll see that who's the main investor in the stock market corporations? Who controls them through proxy voting? It's government.
Absolutely. And government. This is – proxy voting is also known as the Electoral College. That's what that is. It's a college or a group of individuals electing. And again, you have to go all the way back to the 1802 Indemnification Convention, when all of the human beings were indemnified by this insurance policy. And you look at what happened when each state was created by each enablement act. Those are not state constitutions. Those are acts of enablement. And it's the same exact thing as 1933, Hitler coming in with his act of enablement. Now, what everybody needs to be aware of is before they claimed that they went bankrupt in 1933, they'd already postured. And so in 1929, they came up with a great schematic with the 1929 Geneva Convention. And they said, oh, if your government, if a government ever goes bankrupt, we'll be here and we'll put everybody in holding corporations. Just 1 second. Can you cover for me for a second, Clint?
Sure. The joys of children, I guess, huh? Yeah. I got to tell you, Tammy Pepperman needs to do a timeline. She needs to go.
Sorry about that, folks. I thought I was under attack. It's the wind and the screen door. What had happened is in 1929 with the Geneva Convention, they said, if your government ever goes bankrupt, we're going to keep you in our power, which is the holding corporations under Article 2. quote, prisoners of war are in the power of the hostile power, but not of the individual or corporations who have captured them. And what that means is that you will be put in a holding corporation, hypothecated as a negotiable instrument, that black acre, white acre, you're going to be put in a holding corporation, and we're going to hold on to just in case you lose your government. And then all of a sudden, here we have 4 years later, and I do not believe that it was 4 years later. I think that this was done at the same exact time, because when you go through the history of law, these things are, they act as articles of incorporation for a blooming corporation. So if they want to do something, they just do it. I mean, the sheeple would have never looked at a 1929 Geneva Convention. The sheeple still don't look at the 1929 Geneva Convention. And so a lot of these things are created all at the same time in order to establish the corporate structure. And that's what we brought into our case. We went up against them and we said, well, you're human trafficking by holding human beings in corporations. And we actually had a federal judge admit in a court order in federal court, U.S. District Court, that there's a proper way and an improper way to human traffic. Maintaining that he was human trafficking. I had never imagined in my life that I would get a judge to admit on court record that he was actually human trafficking. But we did.
Wow. I was saying while you were gone that you need to come up with a timeline. And you need to just go from basically the inception of whatever till now. And just everything you're quoting, all the different years and all the bills and proclamations and everything else. You need to make a timeline.
Right.
How all of this happened for
people. It's so hard because, you know, years ago I had some hard-ass teachers, and Jeff was one of them, and one of his directions was, you know, go to Avalon, go to Yale, and memorize it. And I got to Yale Law Library, and I'm like, holy crap, how am I ever going to do that? And, yes. You know, I started in on it, and I would balk all the time, and Jeff would tell me, you're just a baby, buck up, you know, put on your big girl pants and all this stuff, and stop whining to me, you know, because I was like, oh my gosh, that's like the worst thing I've ever been exposed to. But all in all, as a female, when I perceive things, I'm very practical. I walk in practicality, which the male walks in logic. So you stack things like in a linear manner. I don't stack things in a linear manner. So when I'm perceiving, I'm able to go through all of these dates and all of these happenings or the physical attributes of something and match them up with other occurrences. And the timeline that you're asking for is actually the Bible. it's also Blackstone's commentaries. You know, it's also the treatise on education or Emile that we were speaking of last night. That's actually what is occurring on a timeline. And these are just articles of incorporation. When you see articles of confederation, articles of a constitution, these are just articles of incorporation. They're business articles. And again, you go back to the Bible. Article means I'm putting on some new clothes. So it's always just masking what is reality to create this consensus reality that everybody lives in. I mean, it's so profound.
Well, and it's funny, you know, I've done several shows on the concept of what's really happening in our own government. And I really don't understand how this is an unknown fact, because everybody knows, for instance, that the president will all of a sudden come up with an executive order, right? And it'll be, waits, you know, people complain, well, how can he do that? It's not, you know, Congress didn't approve it. Why is that possible? And the reality of the situation is that we, you know, just like in Germany, just like in France, just like in Great Britain with the Queen's reserve powers, there's clauses in every constitution that basically allows for the president, quote-unquote, the CEO, to become a dictator. And that's exactly what happened. In France, it's the state of
Absolutely.
Siege. And in America, it's the War Powers Act. And
right.
So.
And when they're doing something as loud as putting their mouthpiece, Obama is a clergy for Congress. It speaks its voice. So it's like the speaker that you see things coming out of. Now, he's doing that so loudly, and he's telling the American sheeple, I'm going to take power over you, even if you don't like it. Becoming a dictator, okay? They have two options in the mind. Are you going to accept that? Are you going to tolerate it? Are you going to push back? They also have a third requirement. Go look and see what they're doing on the back end, because when they're loud like that, and they've got Hitler up there saying, "Heil Hitler," you've got something else going on the back end. And when you look at Nazi Germany, when you look at what was going on during Bolshevik Russia, when you look at what was going on in this country, the name of the game was eugenics, and it was started as a form of hearts and minds through Margaret Sanger bringing in Planned Parenthood. She was going to help you guys. And in that helpful illusion, everybody just, they skip over this Margaret Sanger, call her a good guy. She's the same eugenicist that Hitler loved. He loved those politics, stemming from Nietzsche, stemming from that Vienna Circle, stemming from all of those things that were occurring at that turn of the century. Wilson was foul, absolutely disgustingly foul. You know, Woodrow Wilson, and you could listen to his speeches now and find out just how disgusting he was, but nobody wants to do that. That's history. I don't want to see it. What are we going to do about right now, right here? And that's what we're attempting to overcome.
Oh, well, I'm sure, folks,
we're going to break. We'll be right back. Clint, stick around. And welcome back to the second hour of Leaving the Farm right here on Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps. Tonight, I have just the most amazing co-host, Clint Richardson from the Corporation Nation over on RBN. We are a listener-supported radio station, where if you'd like to donate, please visit us at www.freedomslips.com and click on our support pages. Every little bit helps. Before the break, we were talking about the powers of the presidency and the power of Congress and all of these things and the illusions that are presented to the averaged or averred citizen. General average is actually tossing something over the side of the ship to divest yourself of liability, which is what an indemnification clause is. When you go, for example, you've got Gray Hitler up there right now waving his hands and saying, "I'm going to take authority, I'm going to vest power in myself and everything else." And he's doing this so loudly. Go behind the scenes. Go to such as 16 USC 7, which is the protection of migratory game and insectivorous birds. Okay, that seems innocuous. If you go in there and you actually read that act, Bill Clinton expanded his powers of a president himself, and enough time has passed that the statute of limitations has run out for you to argue that, if you're under statute, that is. But that's just one example of what they're doing behind the scenes. While you're not looking, Billy Clinton was in there doing stuff against humanity. And during that time, of course, you were busy doing what? Being entertained by an affair. Being entertained by his PR rep. His PR rep was a feminist. So, first of all, that thing is in there maintaining that Hillary Clinton, of course, has to be female. She's a victim. And that established, of course, her run for Secretary of State or clearinghouse, which is what the Secretary of State is. It clears the books. It offsets and discharges congressional bankruptcy.
Yeah, and I really want people to understand that it's not the man or woman, it's the office. The problem is not which man gets in there or woman, it's the office. The office is the problem. We have a popularity contest every 4 years, and it's all for show. It means absolutely nothing, because every single time the person, as quoted by several genealogical websites, especially Burke's Peerage, which is one of the most respected that takes care of the royal lineage, they're very clear. The person with the most royal blood, the most lineage, always becomes president. And that has been the case since the beginning, since Washington. They literally say that. Obama, first cousins with King John and Anne Boleyn. Okay, that is who's president. So what I want you to know is that the office, whoever's in the office, is just acting as the officer. Let me read you just one thing, just so you understand that you do have a dictator, and that Congress is full aware of it and also complimentary to it. There is no competition. That is another concept. There is no Republican and Democrat when you're actually in the office. That is a concept. Here's a 12 U.S. Code, Section 95A, I believe. The actions, regulations, rules, licenses, orders, and proclamations heretofore and heretofore and hereafter taken, promulgated, made or issued by the President of the United States or the Secretary of the Treasury since March the 4th, 1933, are hereby approved and confirmed. What does that mean? That means everything since March, well, actually since, I think it was 1917, well, this says since March 4th, 1933, which was the day that Roosevelt came into office, until today and hereafter, everything the president does through his executive orders, his presidential directives, proclamations, there's other tools that can be used, are already approved. They're pre-approved.
Pre-approved credit. Now, the most beautiful thing is that you explain it in one way and I can explain it in another. And that is, I mean, you're just amazing. Okay. So you're bringing in 12 USC whatever. 12 United States Code stems from the actual Emergency Banking Act. That is what established 12 United States Code. So under the Banking Act, for some odd reason that the sheeple will never, ever read, they're not going to go back and read the Banking Act. They're not going to go look at 12 USC. You have somebody directing what a president of a corporation does. Let that sink in. This is 12 USC is the Emergency Banking Act. And you can find the attorney oath, 12 USC subsection 73. Maintaining that the attorney or law firm, which is a bank, is not hypothecated. They're swearing an oath saying that you, the natural person, are the surety and that they could not be the surety at that time. Now, this has all changed since last year. In August, they were declared dead as per the law, 38 U.S.C. 108. They were lost at sea. We went looking for judges. We went looking for a court that wasn't a bank. We went looking for reality, and in the process, we weren't able to find it, and so we had no other option than to declare judges, attorneys, bankers, banks, and agents dead. They're lost at sea. We can't find them because they can never exist. Those are fictions.
Right. Well, let me the other aspect of this is I felt this way since I was a kid, but only you know recently have I really understood why I felt that way. I was like, you know, I always questioned authority. I think a lot of people at least think about questioning it, but I was always like, what gives you the right? You know, who are you? What do you think you're doing? So I was of course doing research, and I said, well, why did we support or give respect to these men in black men and women in the Supreme Court? What is it about these people that we will sit there drooling at the mouth until they decide what is right or wrong and what is good or bad? What is it about these? How have we been fooled into thinking that a group of, what is it, 7 or 9 people are just the end-all, be-all?
Yeah.
How did we get there? So let me read this. I mean, this was – because this is what can happen in a court. You say, oh, well, it's unconstitutional, constitutional. There's no such thing. The court really has nothing to do with the Constitution. It's there to decide on what's created outside of the Constitution. So, even the concept of a constitutional authority is a ridiculous notion. I hate people that call themselves that. But this is Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., who was one of the worst men in history, and another bloodline family member of Bush, my cousin. He says, quote from Bell versus Buck. Carrie Buck was a patient, actually, and she was compulsorily sterilized because the Supreme Court said it's okay. It says, we have seen more than once that the public welfare may call upon the best citizens for their lives.
Yeah, the public okay. welfare.
It would be strange if it could not call upon those who already sap the strength of the state for these lesser sacrifices. We're talking about eugenics here. Often
Absolutely.
not felt to be such by those concerned to prevent our being swamped with incompetence. It is better for all – listen to this, folks. This is the Supreme Court. It is better for all the world if instead of waiting to execute degenerate offspring for crime or to let them starve for their imbecility, society can prevent those who are manifestly unfit from continuing their kind. The principle that sustains compulsory vaccination is broad enough to cover cutting the fallopian tubes. Now, are you going to sit here and tell me that that is quote unquote a constitutional decision? I mean, people don't even know what the heck that word means. I mean, you might as well say Aunt Jemima or,
so pretty.
Canine decision. The word doesn't mean anything because if this can happen.
But what's happening is it looks so pretty. This is all dressed up in robes with idiots holding gavels. Now, I want you all to, and on the archives, you'll be able to listen to this more than once. I want you to go back and listen to what Clinton just said again, please, as soon as the archives are available. And listen carefully, because what they're referring to is useless bread gobblers, according to Nazi Germany. This is a repeat of history. These are your Supreme Court justices. Justices, not judges. These are your Supreme Court justices that you're patronizing, justifying lawful, legal murder, sanctioning murder. And this is the exact same thing that happened in Nazi Germany. These are the same acts of enablement.
The important part is that it's not the man.
No.
It wasn't Holmes that was important. It's the office. It's the power and authority or supposed authority that comes with the office. So trying to, we're just going to change that by having an election and putting a new person in there. No. The office is the problem. Don't try
Absolutely.
To fix something that can't be fixed.
Absolutely. And I'll read as soon as I get my head out of my rectum here. From Black's Law Dictionary, I'd like everybody to hear the definition of election. Quote, election. Number one, the exercise of a choice, especially the act of choosing from several possible rights or remedies in a way that precludes the use of other rights or remedies. That means you don't get certain rights when you're electing. And I'll continue on. Number two, the doctrine by which a person is compelled, that's a force, to choose between accepting a benefit under a legal instrument and retaining some property right to which the person is already entitled. An obligation imposed on a party to choose between alternative rights or claims so that the party is entitled to enjoy only one. You are either a beneficiary or you are buying rights. You're never a beneficiary and with rights at the same time. And you're never, ever, ever, ever the heir when you're electing to have somebody else over you, holding on to your estate for you and governing the direction that you go. These things are absolutely foul.
I know. Please keep in mind that I know you've been doing this a lot longer than me. I mean, this has just been a recent revelation for me. And when I say recent, last couple of years, this whole study of words and where they're formed, the etymology of them, the history of them, and how they're blatantly just pieced together from these, you know, different languages to create such a deceit. I mean, the language is as wonderful as language is. My goodness, it's the most horrific trap I think that we fall into because we just don't know it. So for me, this has been a revelation. I mean, this has been a revolution, if you will, of the mind to know that every single word has at least one, maybe two different dualistic meanings, and it's really it's probably the thing that most opened my eyes. The one word I really want. I mean, homework assignment. I tell this to everybody. I said the one thing that really woke me up to my disposition within this this slave colony and what the Constitution really, really is, which is basically a tool to take away the natural law, the your inherent rights, if you will, because that's all it can do. Look up the word freedom. Look up the word freedom. Look up the word D-O-M first so that you know when the word D-O-M is attached, it means dominion, which when you attach it to free means someone has dominion over your state of being free. Freedom, the word freedom that we parrot like a bunch of parrots, a bunch of goobers, it actually means that you're free to do what you want as long as you obey man's law, government law. Well, if government law says you can't do anything, then you're basically free to do nothing. You can only do what the law tells you to do. And if you don't have a license to do something illegal, you're going to be in trouble. That's freedom. And we worship this word as if it's God-given, and yet it's a political term or it's a political privilege, if you will. Freedom is not what you think it is. It is a concept. Absolutely. It is a state of slavery, and it's incredible. Incredible realization.
And that's what stems from liberty. Most people see liberty as a form of freedom. It is actually only granted within honors. That means that only a non-bankrupt sovereignty can grant the franchise or the incorporation of liberty. And this stems from the Forrest and Chase's charters. So here you are in the forest, and the king is calling you, such as an affiant. When you go in to make an affiant statement or an affidavit in court, for example, they consider that feces. Affiant is scat. It's just basically the excrement of vermin in their forest. And you can watch this throughout Black's Law Dictionary. You can be lurking. There's a definition for latitat. That means you're lurking in their county. And again, you go back to the definitions of county, and that means counter. It's just a place where things are counted, the rolls, the rosters, this is where the thesaurus is. That's the place where you're tricked out. In each county, behind each bench or bank, which is the judge, maintaining the court, within the house. And, of course, we talked about this the other night. That house, the House of Representatives, it has various departments, and inside of those departments, offices. And then it's got lower chambers of its house, which mean rooms and corridors, such as the House of Delegates in West Virginia, Virginia, and New Hampshire. These things are all within the same house. It's a central form of government. It's not decentralized. There's no other puppet masters. It is the Board of Governors, the Broadcasting Board of Governors, the Board of Governors that are behind every single representative, every single senator. This is the Association of Corporate Counsel, or the ACL. And those things, the Association of Corporate Counsel is actually the government two times. So you have board members on the Association of Corporate Counsel that are also from Microsoft, that are also from Anheuser-Busch. These things are also on the Council of Foreign Relations. What is foreign relations? That just means communication between one or more foreign states. So foreign relations can be between Sacramento County and El Dorado County. That is foreign relations. And when you look at that Council of Foreign Relations, who are the members? All of your corporate governance. So who's controlling this communication? Who's controlling the intelligence that's fed to human beings? Who's controlling all of these things? And why are you being taught that liberty is something that you need to strive for? Because it can only be granted by a sovereign state. You want to be at liberty. You don't want to be granted to hold or to have in any way liberty. You want the whole thing.
Well, just the concept of being offered and granted anything will mean that necessarily.
Right. That you're entering into their jurisdiction. If you're asking somebody to do something for you, you're saying, well, you're my God. Go ahead and decide my fate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, and that's what's been sold. That sounds like freedom to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, that sounds like perfect freedom. When those founding fathers said perfect freedom, you know they were thinking, man, we're going to rule these puppies.
Absolutely.
We're going to rule them people. We're gonna put them down so bad. We're going to charge them tax up the wazoo. Oh, they're going to have freedom, and they're going to love it. Just like
Absolutely.
Huxley said, they're going to love that servitude.
Absolutely, and that's the saddest thing. They were saying that all the way back in 1180 with the first presentation. With the House of Gelnhausen Charter, they came in the first sentence and said, hey, these people, we can feed them anything because they have really short memories, and they won't remember any of this stuff. We can tell them that, you know, some dead guy told us to do these things, and this is how we're going to establish the corporation. And that's how it's been maintained, because you see these things in books and in fiction, and you're not relative that, you know, when you were little, for example, most males were told to read the Odyssey and the Iliad by Homer. Those things are fictional stories. However, attorneys took that and called it the history of Greece, and pulled that out of the Homeric hymns, which is Homer again, and such as the poet Hesiod, which is probably Homer, when you go and study these things. And, of course, it makes me sick to my stomach, Clint. A lot of these things, you know, you ask me why I can remember and everything else. I'm sick. Until this ends, I can't let go of any of these things, and it makes me sick as I'm watching humanity take itself to its own demise, like lemmings. They're following this Pied Piper. And every day I'm like, I'm sicker and sicker. And I want them to hear. And they're not hearing yet. And it's terrifying for me because they're in Nazi Germany without realizing that they're already in that camp. They're already in FEMA camps. Federal emergency management is a means of institutionalizing people, and they're not seeing those camps as being jails and prisons and mental institutions and hospital settings and court process. That is what Pilate directs, the crucifier of Christ, Governor Pilate. That is what is being directed. And I'm watching the demise of humankind. And, you know, we found in our case, we've established the court. Right now, we're no longer in negotiations. We have certified the judgment against them at this time, and things will be better soon, and Rocco will be out. But watching humanity still accept these concepts and buy into them and play into them and do what they're doing is just horrifying to watch.
Yeah, I feel the same way. In fact, I think off air yesterday, I even asked you. You know, I'm not one to. I've got a real issue with the word hope. You know, hope to me means you're acting within the mind instead of acting with the heart and with the body. So hope basically means non-action to me. But I asked you off air, actually, whether you actually have any hope that what you are doing and on a lesser degree what I'm doing by pronouncing this at the top of our lungs is actually going to have an effect. And do you think that people are really going to suddenly, with all this information and how long it takes to actually comprehend it, do you really think that we have a chance, a snowball's chance in hell, basically, and I mean that literally, to do anything about this? And I sometimes wonder if I made the best decision by giving up my career and pursuing, you know, in a non-profit way everything I've done. But at the same time, I don't know, because I have the feeling that there's always been a small group of people that have really tried to project onto and help the other, you know, larger population, and I don't think it's ever worked. I don't think there's ever been
until now.
An enlightened. Well, I hope you're right, but I just don't think there's ever been an enlightenment of an entire people. I think it's just as the people who started this country, I think it's always been a small group of people that's led the masses through misinformation and everything else. The question is, can a small group of people without money, power, really clout, no credentials, no nothing, can that small group of people make a change, make a revolution? That's what
I
want.
Absolutely. And, from an esoteric point of view, I've walked all of my life and I've suffered many, many things, and I'll continue to suffer many things, not because I want to, but because those are my directives. And my entire being is in 1 Corinthians 13. I'm supposed to bear all things, suffer all things, hope and believe all things, and maintain with faith, hope, and charity. And you're the same. That is the actual state of being of humanity. And it took me a long time to realize that. At first, I was still seeking titles. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll be a martyr. No, it comes down to being human. And that is what that directive said. If you're going to walk as a human and divest yourself of all of these titles, then that which is perfect is come. That's when it comes. When you're not able to be parted out any further, when you're not able to be called black or white or female or male or gay or lesbian or homosexual, straight, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, when you're no longer taking up those titles and you're not separated from the garment, that's when that which is perfect has come. And we're seeing that now. And I could go into depth. I love watching or listening to your show. And you're on 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. The only day that we miss it, of course, is Thursday, because we're on at the same time, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And, watching your ratings, that's something that never happened before. Number one, your ratings are great. The second part of that is that you are not bought off. And we've seen groups of people, the Vienna Circle, back at the turn of the century, that was during the time when Wilson was up there, and he was, just before, with Wilson, Hoover, Roosevelt, and all these things, the Vienna Circle had gone up there, and they were teaching what we're teaching. They were doing what we're doing. However, they were all bought off. And in my walk, now in my time, I've seen so much of that, but I've seen so much more of human beings being able to take it and evidence what is actually happening without being bought off. And that's the most profound aspect of anything I've ever witnessed, is to watch the stand. It is really a stand, the resurrection, when you're able to stand again and, take the onslaught. Because that's what Jesus said in 1 Corinthians 13. He said, take it. You've got to take it. There's no other option. But when you come out of the other side, everything will be perfect.
Wait a minute. Did you say I have ratings?
Absolutely, I love them.
How do you know that? I don't even know what ratings are.
Oh, come on. This all acts on media. You can find your ratings over at TalkStream Live. It does the ratings for all of the major talk shows, and yours are some of the highest ratings I've seen.
I have no idea what that even means. You'll have to show me, because I've not known how to check. I've had guests that I invite on the show ask me, well, who listens, how many people listen to your show? I was like, I don't know. You know what? If that's your opinion, I don't want you. Because if it's two people and you get through to one of them, that's all that counts.
Right. But in this society, it counts because of trending behavior. That's what everything's running on with this new cloud technology and everything else. They're trending behavior. And apparently, according to your ratings, you're trending, so that's good. And that doesn't happen. In Jesus' time, he had a small group of people, and, he wasn't very trendy because he was outside of the box. But we're seeing a change in this time right here, right now. That's just amazing. I mean, Revolution Radio, we're trending all the time. Number one, we're in the highest ratings bracket as well. And that's what's so interesting to see now with RBN. I quit listening to anybody except for you when Bill came over to Revolution Radio. And that's the only one I see on the ratings is you when you come on. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing because there's so much smoke being blown. There's so much illusion still being presented. Coast to Coast has fallen off the ratings. That was something major. When Coast to Coast isn't on there and they're not promoting this agenda, that's great. And a lot of times both Revolution Radio and your ratings, you're beating such as the BBC. You know, these people are not speaking truth. These entities are not speaking truth. And when the truth becomes the fun thing and the entertaining thing, that's the most amazing thing because that's when we know we're getting somewhere. We're going somewhere because truth is not very trendy. It hurts. And
which is why I'm surprised to hear you say that. I figured I was offending more people than I was garnering.
You're absolutely beautiful.
Well,
absolutely beautiful.
Good to know. Thanks for having me. By the way, this has been fun. 2 days worth.
I hope you come on more often as well. And like I said, that invitation's on the table, what we talked about yesterday. And it's just, it's just the amount of, when you watch now, CNN is actually reporting the truth. Other media outlets, mainstream media outlets are reporting the truth. They nailed, that's what we do. Especially on Bull and Rocco's show lately, he does the Surety Roundup and everything. I never know what to do because I'm so erratic in my mind. It just depends on what people require at the time. So many are suffering, and they'll get back to me back channel, and they'll say, what about this? And then, I'll explain what's going on. But we're watching psychiatrists take the fall. We didn't see that in Nazi Germany. Not until the very end.
Did I cut out, or did you cut out this time?
Oh, you must have cut out. I didn't see any bubbles. But we didn't see this stuff.
Well, in case it's you.
Uh-oh. Oh, maybe we did. Are you going to help me close? I don't see any bubbles now. So if we're on the air, hopefully Clint will be right back.
Well, I'm not sure if we still have a connection.
There you are. I think we're back. Can you hear me? Mm-hmm. That's not good. So we have good times. Let me get that. Maybe I need to. Do I have you back, Clint? It looks like I'm on the air. I'm sorry about that, folks. I don't know what's going on, these technical difficulties, but hopefully we've got back. There you are.
I never have technical difficulties. What's going on here?
So it's just censorship. It's okay. They have our fee scheduled. That was the most... beautiful thing, and that's a lot of what the listeners don't realize, throughout this case and they were all notified. They understood our court, including the CIA. Of course, we were in contact constantly with Brennan there and the Secretary of State, which is the Secretary of State. That's the Department of State. And this has just been the most profound and as I tell everybody, the CIA has my address. So if I was doing something wrong or whatever else, they could just take me out. They've got all the guns. So whatever will be, will be.
Well, isn't that funny, though? That's one of the big things that stops people from actually doing a lot of things they should be doing is they look at the military apparatus of the United States and they say, well, how can you, why would I try to get out of this system when they would just come in with their guns and do all this, and I'm like, well, but that's a bit of a fallacy. That's a real, real lame excuse.
Absolutely.
To go along with and support the military that would otherwise oppose you. I mean, it's kind of a catch-22. You have to, like your website says, I mean, you have to make a choice. You have to, do you have a soul? For God's sake, do you have anything left in you to realize that your participation in this is your support of all of this? Right. I mean, can you not see that? I mean, and I guess it is hard for some people. For me, it was easy. I saw what I was doing in Hollywood as a sound editor, working on games and movies and making demons hiss and, you know, devils growl. And for me, it was easy. I said, okay, this is just getting too ridiculously violent and bloody and gory and propaganda. And I was out of there. I said, there's no way I'm going to sit around here and make six figures promoting and being a part of what is the problem. There's no way. Is it really that hard for people?
Well, and if you put it into perspective, into, you know, so that the mind can wrap around it, if you are fearful of your oppressor oppressing you, why would you even think that you're being oppressed? If you don't want to go up against an oppressor for fear that it's going to oppress you some more, then what's the point? You know, it's just that simple, and that's something that took me a long time to wrap my mind around myself, because, you know, I was attempted on in 2010, in May of 2010, and at that point in time, it started to click. So this guy's sitting there, and he's being directed to kill me. He was apologizing for my death, so of course it's coming. You were such a good friend. You were such a good woman. You were such a good person. And in that instance, and then the time following, because, of course, after I get out of that situation, I'm, like, jerky. I'm jumping all the time. I'm worried about somebody coming around the corner attempting on me again. And, I went into this state of fear that was something I'd never, ever experienced in my life. Throughout various other forms of trauma, I'd never experienced that before. But at the other end, I'm like, what am I being so selfish about? Here I am, I'm fearing my own death. I'm missing myself before I'm gone. And at that point in time, I was not living for the longest time there because I was so fearful of living. And that's just silly.
Yeah. I mean, what's the point? I mean, you might as well be the worst kind of fundamentalist,
Fascist state. And the fascist state is created by ourselves when we're consenting and when we're playing into and buying into that fear and all of these constructs. And it's just insane because, you know, first they have to teach us me and the ego, the superego, and the id. And everything else after that point in time falls into place, so we act like those characters in a play. Until we start realizing until we start realizing that we're acting out a play, as characters in a play, we're not able to divest those titles. You know, I had no idea how much indoctrination I was exposed to until I started realizing reality. And at that point in time, then you can divest yourself of things that possess you, as Jesus says. But I mean, it takes a heck of a long time just to get over the self. And a lot of slaps, a lot of feeling shame, a lot of feeling embarrassment, you know, because, you know, I was so selfish without even realizing it. When it was first proposed to me that I was being selfish, in my mind, I was like, No, I'm a good girl. I do all of this charity and I do all of this advocacy and everything else. But in the end, it's so much selfish behavior for me because I wasn't going forward to do what I needed to do back then. I was still advocating. I was still delegating authority elsewhere. I was still vesting power in others to do something. Do something. Oh, please help these children. Please help these families. And when you realize at one point in time that you're doing that and you're feeding people, you're delivering them up. It's like, it's so profoundly
You're the only one that can help. You're the one. There's no one else. If you see the problem, you're the one that's supposed to try to fix it. Hey, I want to – and by the way, you know, we talk about attorneys. We always basically put down the attorney class. But I don't think people realize something very important. Your politician, your congressman, your senator, your governor, whatever, your councilman, they are your attorney.
Yes.
They are acting on your behalf. And they are not acting for you. They are acting for themselves in your name. And,
right.
And it's important to understand that your representatives, your Congress, are in fact attorneys. You are attorneying your power to them. You're giving it up. I don't think that concept has sunk into a lot of people's minds that literally you're giving all of your rights up in order to have a representative, as opposed to a delegate, which would bring something back to you and you'd vote on it. The people would actually vote instead of themselves. Now they create the law in your name and they vote in your name. So it's, I mean, that is a dictatorship, really.
Absolutely.
But what I wanted to read out of this magazine I mentioned before, it's called Religious Cults. And it's written by a woman. Let me see here. It's written by a woman who was in, she was in a cult called the Democratic Workers Party. Her name is Dr. Janja Lilic, a self-proclaimed expert, I suppose, on cults. And here's what it says. Now, what I want you folks to listen to is I want you to understand that while this is referring to a cult, this is about citizenship to the United States. This is about your membership to a cult called the United States. Listen to what this says, because the title of this little section is, Why Don't People Just Walk Away When Things Begin to Look Bad? So why don't you walk away when the United States looks as bad as it does today? Here's what she says. They don't walk away because they're in too deep and they believe in the cult. Once your worldview has shifted and you truly believe deep in your heart that this is your salvation, not God, but the United States is your salvation, this is what you need to do to reach your goal. It's very hard to turn away from that. The first thing they get you to do during indoctrination or public school is to not trust yourself and trust only them, trust only government. It will protect you. In that way, you will always turn to them in times of crisis. On top of that, there's fear. Do we live in a fear-based economy? I would say so. On top of that, there's fear. Fear of what might happen to you if you leave the cult. Fear, in some cases, for your life. Fear that you'll lose everything. That you're going to let people down. There's guilt and shame and regretful feelings of complicity about things that in the back of your mind didn't feel right. Well, yeah, nothing feels right. But you went along with it, leaving you feeling confused and culpable. Doesn't this describe the average citizen, the average person out there? You may have recruited other people, so you think, how can I leave when I've brought in these others or convinced so many others to stay when they wanted to leave? You may have to leave your family behind, your livelihood, your home. Leaving a cult really means, in many cases, that you have to give up everything. Really, you do. That's really very difficult to do. So people stay and hope for the best. They think, it's okay. It's not so bad. This is what I believe in. I'm the bad guy in this situation. So that's what she says about why people don't just walk away from the cult. They have a completely irrational, unlogical, or if you will, patriotic feeling of duty to stay with the cult. In this case, it's the United States. I found that to be a very, very eye-opening little piece.
Profound. I love that. When you go over to the definition of Stockholm Syndrome, quote, Stockholm Syndrome or capture bonding is a psychological phenomenon in which hostages express empathy and sympathy and have positive feelings toward their captors, sometimes to the point of defending them, joining their militaries in their Hitler youth camps.
Yeah.
These feelings are generally considered irrational in light of the danger or risk endured by the victims, who essentially mistake a lack of abuse from their captors for an act of kindness. So if they're not picking on me and they're only picking on you, who gives a crap, right? You know, they're not picking on me right now. They're just picking on you, my brown brother or my Indian brother or my Muslim or Christian neighbor over there. You know, this is what allows it to go outside of the human mindset, because you can see it happening before your eyes, but as long as it's not happening to you, you're not going to jerk into response. Or into self-defense in any way. I mean, it's just, it's so sad, but that is Stockholm Syndrome. And, of course, that term was from the Patty Hearst kidnapping. When Patty Hearst was kidnapped, of course, this happened in 1974, same year as the Congressional Budget and Impoundment Act, making the Senate Judiciary Committee even more powerful than they were. And by the way, separation of powers means there's no Senate Judiciary Committee. But, you know, I digress. These things are just like capture buttons.
There is no. I've got a documentary about the Three Force done that is about the Senate Ethics Committee and the Congressional Ethics Committee. It's the most ridiculous thing you'll ever see because first of all, they make their own ethics. Okay, the Dianne Feinstein, I think, is one of the people on the board.
And absolutely,
it's the most ridiculous thing you'll ever see in your life. And basically, the way the Senate works is that they govern themselves not only in their actions but in the law. They decide what is if anything's been done. So every year there's like 100, maybe 130. Different complaints of Senate ethics violations, right, or Congress. And I looked up their report. I found their report that says what actually happens between all those. And every single year there's at least 100 reports of ethics violations, which goes to the Senate. Six senators. So I compare it to like having a prison ethics committee where six prisoners sit on the board. Well, they're all complicit with each other.
Absolutely.
How can you possibly expect them to say, oh, you broke a rule? Because then he'd be like, well, you're an inside traitor. You did this. You've done this illegal.
Right.
And so, oh my God, every single year there is never a judicial review. In other words, it never gets out of the Senate Committee on Ethics. They never send a case to the judicial review. Therefore, every crime is completely legal because it's ethical, according to the Senate.
And not only that, now this is going to piss you off more than anything. There's also judicial ethics committees and everything else.
Right.
Now, when they come in to spank each other, they're asking for money to protect while they're spanking each other. So this is a schematic. So Johnny Cornyn, Dianne Feinstein, and, of course, the others, Barbara Boxer, they're all back there, and they'll say, oh, that's a bad boy. I'm going to go after that bad boy. They're getting paid to go after that bad boy. They find them guilty, quote, guilty of ethics violations that pertain to statutory or legislative decisions or statutory law. They're saying that they violated a law. However, what they did was they harmed a human being in that thing, but they were never charged with harming the human being, and it's all a game. That's another business schematic on the back end. So they're just laughing as they take all the money, and you can see this. It's a clear example when you go back to the induction of the KKK. That was the Democratic Party back then. The Democrats were the conservative party back in the 1920s. And what they did was they created the KKK. Well, then there was a paradigm shift in 1938 was started as Caesar's case law, common law. And so the Democrats became the Liberal Party, what you see as the Liberals now. And by the 1960s, they came in and said, oh, we need some programs to combat racism and combat the sexism, you know. But this is all engineered by them. That's the Hegelian dialectic. And so you've got all of this engineering going on. In the back end, they're saying, well, we're going to protect females and children over here. They don't protect females and children. They don't protect anybody. That's another way of getting money into their pockets. And you pay for it when you are patronizing it.
Yeah, it's all on us. Like I said, there's no one to blame. I mean, there's no one to blame. That's the sad part about it. You think about it, you're like, who can I blame for this except myself?
Calling it your father, and that's what Jesus was saying. Call no man your father. Stop going in front of them. Matthew 23 says, what the heck are you doing even patronizing those judges? What are you doing patronizing that thing? It tells you not to do things. It tells you not to do this or that, but it doesn't do those things. It will not lift a finger. It looks great on the outside. Its cup is all shiny on the outside. It's dressed in an Armani suit. It's driving a Miata. It's driving a Jaguar and lives in a condominium in a high-rise somewhere. That thing looks really pretty. Its cup is all shiny. But inside of that cup is what you want to see, because that's pure filth. There's nothing in there but pure filth, vile, and extortion. And it's absolutely disgusting. And this is the time to choose your side. You have to make that decision. Are you going to patronize your own house, or are you going to patronize that other father that you were told not to call father in the first place?
Yeah. Are you familiar with my favorite U.S. code? I say it all the time, but I'm sure that you're familiar with it. It's probably one of my favorites because it really lets people understand what it is, what their position in the society is. Are you familiar with 42 U.S. Code 1981?
Yeah.
Isn't that great? I got to read it because it's the perfect way to let you know exactly how government considers you. Because what this is a state, it's the equal rights under the law. It's a statement of equal rights. And we have to understand that what that means, it doesn't mean, oh, suddenly the Indian and the black and the white men are equal and we respect each other. No, it has nothing to do with that. It means you're equally punishable under the law. That's what equal rights are. So it says, statement of equal rights. I'll just read the first part. It says, all persons within the jurisdiction of the United States, which is we could talk at 2 hours on just that first little part. All persons within the jurisdiction of the United States shall have the same right in every state territory to make and enforce contracts, to sue, be parties, give evidence, and to the full and equal benefit of all laws and proceedings, security of persons and property, as is enjoyed by one citizens. Now, that all sounds, hey, that doesn't sound so bad, does it? And then the last little part, which is, you know, every single code has its exceptions. The last part says, and all persons within the jurisdiction of the United States shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind, and to no other. Wow, man, when I read that, I'm like, what?
Are you kidding me?
Absolutely. Extortion of every kind? What?
Absolutely. You're subject to those things, and you're subject because you are an animal on their farm. When you go to U.S. 7 U.S.C., United States Code, which is agriculture, and then you go to 7 U.S.C., subsection 136, you find that D, animal, quote, the term animal means all vertebrates and invertebrate species, including but not limited to man and other mammals, birds, fish, and shellfish.
Yeah, pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah, you're
there's,
just
there's
a
several
resource.
Sections that reinforce that, too. And then if you go to, you know, the real kick in the pants is Title 50, where you get into the biological weapons program that basically says that they have the right at any time to basically do anything to you. There is no limits, from radiation to what we call chemtrails, geoengineering. They can test chemical, biological weapons, Title 50, at any time without your permission, because they garner your consent.
Yes, that's the
which
national
is a requirement. Yeah,
Title
it's
50.
Amazing.
Title 50 is the National Security Act, and those contracts can be found at the Ethics Commission, the Freeburg's Ethics Commission, or FICCI, Commission International. You can go there and read the contracts between the United States FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, that maintains they are using you as human test subjects. It's all written.
Where is that?
That is at the Ethics Commission International, the Freeburg's Ethics Commission International, or FECI, F-E-C-I, which means actually the literal translation is to kill the fee. And that is their agreements under their Rules of Procedure 2006, which is the most current to use human beings as the human test subjects. But you go back to just the National Security Act, and you can read that in there. The memorandum that sparked this war against us and upped it to the extent that it is was Memorandum 200, written by Dr. Henry Kissinger in 1974, and he maintained that depopulation should be the highest priority of all foreign policy. And with that directive, you see the Department of Health and Human Services, that is the depopulation program. And I wish we had more time. Clint, thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody. Absolutely. Love you well.
Absolutely.